everybody, it's me, Kathleen Madigan. Welcome to Madigan's Pubcast. You grab yourself a drink, pull up a bar stool, and let's talk about what's been going on. Termites! Fire! Episode what? Yes, it's episode 66. Wow. Yeah, how exciting is that? So many exciting things. First of all, this is my favorite long sleeve t-shirt because I feel like I'm on Star Trek. And I never really watched the real Star Trek. I only watched The Next Generation, but they always had this thing where they could talk into it and go, paddles, report to the deck.
To the brewery.
And then you would, to the brewery. Because this is a brewery outside of Calgary in Canada in the town of Vulcan.
Yep.
And the Vulcan Brewery, but it's just a simple shirt. I like simplicity. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, look what has arrived. Woo-hoo! Oh, the Pubcast shirts. Look, and there's two paddles on the front.
Yeah,
paddle. And then this is the back.
Oh, cool.
I love black and pink. I love gray and pink too, but more people voted for black. So I'll do a gray one at some point. But this is a large, and they're super soft.
And Ron picked the pink.
Yeah, Ron did choose the pink. But some comedians' merch, I won't use names, feels like cardboard. And I blame them for not giving a shit. And not. It's hard, though, if you're ordering all this online, you don't know what it's going to feel like. So you have to have somebody that knows what is it all going to feel like. And there you go, termites. These will be available in the next couple of days. I don't know exactly when, but, you know, just keep checking. Or I'll put a thing on Twitter and Instagram when they're available. Okay, so that's that. And the only reason I don't have this one on is because I haven't washed it. And right out of the box is I'm always allergic to t-shirts until I get to wash them one time in my non-allergy stuff. Okay, there we go. Oh, my God. So many things, termites. Look at this. See, paddles? This is what I was talking about. Catherine, a termite, sent this. This is the thing I'm telling you my mom used to use in the grocery store. It says dollars, dimes, cents. So let's say she bought soda and it was $2. 1, 2, 50 cents. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Come on.
And this is how crazy, wicked smart my mom is, though. Like, it took me like an hour to figure out how to use this. They put cents, dimes. She would get up to her budget, and if we went over, she'd say put $18 worth of stuff back. But she could do the math backwards on her own.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Ooh,
crazy smart.
Crazy.
Yeah. A little frightening, so smart she can be
at
that.
Your crypto with that.
Yeah. Because I would just sit there and be like, wow, she's a wizard. But yeah, it's called Quick Adder. I could still use this.
Which is not something you are.
No, I'm going to use it. No, I'm not a quick adder. I'm not even a quick, but it only goes up to, see, this one goes up to 20, mm-hmm. and then it starts over. So I don't know how my mom did that. Well, I guess she'd go 20, start over till 20.
Yeah.
It's still hard.
She probably had a
list. Yeah, she did have list. And then she always makes up fake budgets in her head. Yeah, she likes to pretend like, I don't know, that they just have absolutely no money.
No money ever.
And what am I drinking? This is Cabin Boys Brewery, Castelline. This is from where? Tulsa, Oklahoma. Almost said Tulsa alcohol. Yeah, look, it's got a little fly fishing thing, lure,
cool.
And it's a matte finish on the can.
Nice.
I like it.
Yeah.
Very different. Very tasty. It's a refreshing West German style ale. Gives you a splash of biscuit. Lemongrass and pear and crisp finish will reel you in. Reel, R-E-N, and get it like a fish. And have you hooked. Have you hooked, line, and sinker.
Nice.
Yeah. It's a delicious. If you're ever in Tulsa, go get yourself something by the cabinboysbrewery.com. And no, these people do not sponsor me. People send me these things or give me these things. That's where I get them from.
The P.O. box was full this week.
A lot of stuff for the P.O. box from the termites. That the quick adder being one of them. And then this from termite Catherine in Pennsylvania. You know, every town I go to in Pennsylvania is just another little joy-filled place. I have a show in Reading in December on Sunday night, and it's almost sold out. Like 1,500 tickets. I almost said no, because I said it's a Sunday.
Yeah.
Who's going to come? I don't even know how it happened. Yeah. But anyway, Catherine in Pennsylvania sent this. Oh, look at this. It's the Dolly Advent Calendar.
Nice. Oh,
yes.
My gosh. I tried to get one. I couldn't.
They're very hard to get. So Catherine must have been way thinking ahead. And it starts December 1st, which is what? My mom's birthday.
Oh, how appropriate.
Yeah, she's a Sagittarius. I think if you Google it, more women in prison than any other sign are Sagittarians.
Really?
Yeah, and I've seen that part. I have seen that part of my mom that I go, yeah, I could see you stabbing someone. Yeah. This says, for country music, led to Dolly Parton, the holiday season is about faith, fun, food, and family, and plenty of sweet surprises for everyone. This year, Dolly brings home some festive magic with her signature advent calendar. Every day from the first day of December until the night before Christmas, you'll discover a different treat hidden behind a calendar window. These colorful individual wrap confections are some of Dolly's favorites, including gold chocolate stars, champagne bubbles. What's a champagne
nice.
Bubble?
I don't know.
Wow.
You're
going
to have to do this.
I'm going to.
So great.
Yeah. 24. Now, see, you had asked me. Because I go, whoa, there's candy in here? And you're like,
yeah.
The only advent calendar I ever got was from the nuns, and you'd pop it out, and it would be like some Bible thing.
Boo.
Yeah, boo, yeah. When you're a kid. It's just more homework.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever. It was fun. I don't know. There wasn't ever something fun in it. It was religious.
Ours, I shop at every day.
Well, that's wonderful. Good for them.
Cadbury every day. So good.
What are we eating? Look at these guys trying to, they're trying to keep up with Kraft, the lunch, and then the Lunchable thing. This is clearly for kids' lunches, right? But this wouldn't be bad traveling. Yeah. I flew home from Florida on Southwest. By the way, they're not selling any alcohol on Southwest. And I was so mad because I had two tiny Tito's bottles that I could have transferred for a morning screwdriver. And the weekend's over. I did all my shows. I should get a morning screwdriver to fly home, take a nap. And I had them in, I didn't transfer them to anything, and you're not supposed to. But what I love is on the announcement, it is a federal offense to drink liquor you have brought on board yourself. And I'm like, the federal government? They can't even figure out who killed Kennedy still. And you think they're going to nail little Kathleen Madigan with the tiniest bottle of Tito's ever known to man. I didn't do it, but anyway. Now, these would be good for planes. You could take these on planes since there's no... nothing decent on planes anymore either. Don't bring your own food, people. I'm telling you, especially if it's a long flight. This is supposed to be in this compartment, cheesy ranch style, and then these are whole grain breadsticks. This is Laughing Cow, and I love Laughing Cow.
Yeah, but whole grain, come on.
Well, I'd rather it be white bread, but I'm the only one. Mm.
No.
No.
Oh, no.
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 There's garlic in it. I know it. I hate
it's
garlic.
Ranch flavored.
Well, there's other... No. That's not ranch flavored. I know ranch.
Is it
in life? There's... skim... Oh, Gouda? I don't know. I don't like it. F.
Oh. Wow.
I'd rather have a Lunchable with just cheddar cheese.
Okay.
All right.
Wow.
How about a buffalo ranch flavored almond? Shall we? Who makes these? Simple truth.
Simple.
I hope my tooth hurts.
They know you love
simplicity. I don't taste any ranch. All I taste it was an almond.
Boo.
Mm.
You shouldn't have to suck on it.
That's where you get in the ranch.
If
you don't suck on it, you're not going to get the ranch. I would say no.
It's not a Jolly Rancher.
No. I don't, certainly not Buffalo Ranch. God damn. No. No.
Well.
All right, last thing we're going to try.
Okay.
This looks good. I have to get that taste out. Hold on. That's gross. Sorry, I'm eating so loudly to my two-thirds. Mm-hmm.
Gross.
I shouldn't be eating almonds.
No.
Not right now.
No.
Lighthouse Homestyle Ranch. Let's see. I already pre-poured it in the bowl, so you didn't have to listen to that. I know it's loud. That's loud, too.
It's
all right. Wow.
Good?
Great.
Nice. Great.
Great. Woo! Somebody finally hit the nail between tangy and enough dairy.
What is it?
Lighthouse. Lighthouse Homestyle dressing and dip. I could definitely see it as a dip.
It's
yeah.
Midwest.
But as a dressing, too, but it's not... Some of them get too thick. Oh, yeah. Has a lot of fat in it. Yeah. Good. Not a lot of carbs, though. Only 2 grams of carb, but that's probably like in a teaspoon or some shit. I don't know. You can't count calories when it comes to ranch. You just got to pick the ranch you like and eat it. Otherwise, you're just going to be disappointed. All right. Wow. Well, that's a lot of stuff right there. We'll put that away. We're going to put Dolly back here so I don't spill anything on it. Wouldn't that be tragic?
Absolutely.
That'd be awful.
Terrible.
We'll start doing it next week. Speaking of Dolly, have you heard it? Termites? No. Well, there's a new Jolene remix by Destructo.
Nice.
I didn't know who that was. I don't know. Well, yes, I do. I know that now. And she says it's her favorite. Yep, it makes me want to dance. How about you? I listened to it. You got to get past the first part because to me it just sounds like a scratch record. It's going, ba-na-na-na-na-na, yo. And she doesn't finish Jolene. It's just, yo. Yeah, you get the idea.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what it sounds like.
From Diplo or Diplo?
Diplo.
Diplo? I'd go with Diplo. Working with Zach Brown, Billy Ray Cyrus, Thomas Rhett, Blanco Brown, and more, plus Black Bear. Oh, I like that. Is that a rapper? DJ?
I don't know.
Black Bear, collaborating with Kane Brown, and the merging of electronic and country lanes is busier than usual. Adding to this re-emerging trend is Hard Festival founder and DJ Destructo. His real name's Gary Richards. You're not getting you're not getting anywhere in that world named Gary Richards. Who's your DJ? Gary Richards. Yep. No, he's also an accountant. He did my taxes, and then he was like, look what I can do in my garage. And I was like, you're hired. He's created a festival-ready mix of Dolly Parton's 1974 hit Jolene. She said, my little song Jolene's been done so many different ways, and I love them all, but I think this one is my favorite. Makes me want to dance. How about you? As well, Destructo adds, Jolene has been part of my musical DNA since day one. It's a true classic, not only for country music, but for American music. I've always felt its lyrics and melody could be the bones to build a real dance floor banger around. Mm. Something to sing along while you get your dance on. I'm beyond being thrilled given the opportunity to remix one of the greatest songs of all time and that Dolly loves it. She's a national treasure. And to be able to hear my version of it with her is beyond a blessing. So there you go. Yeah. Shaka's going to be on verses, but it's... I got to look into more. I don't know what network Versus is on. And it's her against Stephanie Mills.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's going to be great. But I need to get more information on that before I talk to you guys about that. Because somebody tweeted to me, which was very nice. Some guy, I want to see if I can find this tweet made me laugh so hard. And I hit him back. I looked for it the other day. I took a screen. Oh, I got to look at if I took a screenshot of it. I know I did. Or I took a picture of it. Yeah. Chris Jones, a guy on Twitter. It's 10:22, Toronto Airport. There's an elderly woman wearing a flannel shirt, absolutely ripping through. Oh, I didn't. A tall boy. And he basically says it's me. And somebody wrote, he called you elderly. And here it is. He goes, absolutely ripping through a tall boy. I'm not saying in love with her, but I'm not in love with her. And I wrote back, if only I looked good in red. It could have been me, but I do not wear red because I look terrible. Yeah, so that was very funny. I read all that stuff.
That's great.
Moving on, update! Oh my God, the whole world knows. Britney's free!
So great.
Isn't it wonderful? Yay. Now we'll have a chance to see. All I'm saying is Britney should get the chance. She should have gotten the chance years ago, I would think.
Yep.
And if she goes off the deep end, we're having a little powwow. We have another little come to Jesus. But, you know, she gets to, she's done. Nearly 14 years. I can't believe that they made her use birth control. I mean, Jesus Christ. Imagine if you tried to do that to a dude. Oh, my God.
No
way. Nearly 14 years after losing power over personal affairs and multimillion-dollar fortune, she's finally getting her life back. On Friday, L.A. County Superior Court Judge Brenda Penny terminated Spears' conservatorship effectively immediately, freeing the 39-year-old pop star from the legal binds that allowed her dad and team to make decisions about her work, who she could have contact with, how much money she could spend. I mean, to say, like, she couldn't even have people over without clearing that.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I didn't even know we did that anymore. I mean, for old people, I've heard of conservatorships. Like, super-duper-duper special needs where they cannot, you know, function on their own and they all that. Somebody's got to, you know, look out for them. But somebody who's doing 12 shows a week in Vegas, that lady? I mean, come on now.
Right.
Anyway, she said it was a demoralizing chapter in her life. Yes, it was. And while the Free Britney fan movement and increased security from news outlets hastens what we know to be a year-long fight to regain control. She wants her life back, but she testified. So here's what she wrote on Instagram. Good God, I love my fans so much. It's crazy. Termites, would you get me out of a conservatorship?
Yeah.
Let's say somebody placed me into the wacko zone.
I would love to see that attempt to be happening. No.
No, I have a good fan base. They'd make it happen. Yeah. And I think I have some smart ones out there, probably lawyers and few judges maybe. Yeah. I think I'm going to cry the rest of the day, she tweeted. Best praise ever. Praise the Lord. Can I get an amen? Amen. Emoji, emoji, emoji. Praying hands, praying hands. And in a follow-up on Instagram, she posted a photo of her in a bright yellow dress with the caption, I can't freaking believe it. Best day ever. So there you go. All those little Britney fans. Wow. They did it.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, they started it. That led to the documentary. Credit where credit is due. I don't think I'd have the time to free Stevie Nicks or any of these women. If you get locked up, that's on you. I ain't got the time. Well, in the summer, I would. I'd have time in the summer.
I'd drive my
office. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Update. By the way, I got a new flexible lighter that I like way better than this, but I couldn't find the scissors to open them. Next one. Yeah. Where was I? I forgot to even say it. At Talking Stick Resort. Oh my God. If you're ever in Scottsdale, Talking Stick Resort, first of all, it opened in 2010. So the whole, it's 2010. So the whole casino is new. There's a golf course right out back. The pool is great. They have a wonderful spa, if that's what you're into. Their restaurants are great. There's like regular ones. Just, you can just grab sushi downstairs, the low key deal at a sushi bar. They have fancy places. It's just, and then non-fancy places just for fun.
Apparently the best fries in the world.
The best French fries in the world. I've heard it 3 times now. And then I forgot the fucking, I didn't hear it till too late. A termite told me that I met after the show. Because then I went to go have a drink with the opening act, Michael Palisak. Very funny guy. Mm-hmm. And I went to go have a drink with him and his friends. And a termite told me about that downstairs that I took a picture with. So anyway, way to go, Wayne. Way to go, Native Americans, just killing it out there. So it's a wonderful gig, and I get to stay for 2 nights in a row. I never get to do that anymore. Like in the clubs, you work the clubs, you stay Wednesday through Sunday. Mm-hmm. You set up your little camp. Everything's great.
Yeah.
But the theater, I'm not complaining. Like I enjoy the upgrade. It's nice to get out of the clubs for sure, but it's a lot more travel, a lot. So it was a super treat to be able to stay Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And yes, I gambled Thursday. And yes, I was at the video. They're very strict there, too. Like, they still had the plexiglass in between the machines, which, boy, you want to make me stay even longer? Make me a cubbyhole. Now I'm gambling, like, in an office. I'm like, this is wonderful. And then, but then, one of the keynote players, this is a super inside gambling thing. If you don't worry, I won't talk about it long. But those machines, if the volume is up loud, I can't. It's worse than me and my brother call the gambler. We call them the slappers, where they sit down in a machine and instead of just, all you got to do is press it. So it's like and then I become obsessed with what they're doing and then I'm not paying attention. And anyway, I got 3-4 of a kinds and, you know, I ended up breaking even.
Nice.
Well, I sent pictures to Lou and he's like, well, how much are you up? I go, well, you didn't see the first 500 I put in that got nothing. I'm even now. Anyway, so shout out to them and heading down to Florida. Back to Florida. Because I haven't been to Florida enough this month. Jesus Christ. Fort Lauderdale, Sarasota, Ponte Verde.
So
I gotta look what that means. What's that mean? Green? Verda?
I don't know. Hang on. What does Ponte
Verda? What's that mean? Something green, I bet. Strong.
Oh my god. What does it mean? Hang on.
What?
Old bridge.
Old bridge?
Yep.
Ah.
Yeah.
Boy, I was way off.
Yeah, and they actually have it on their website.
Oh, okay, great.
Old bridge, or what did you say? Little green.
I said little green men. No, I didn't. I said green.
Okay.
Update! It's the first update. This one. I told you guys I would keep on this.
Oh, no.
It's not Elizabeth.
Okay.
Yet. QAnon followers return to Dealey Plaza 4 days after JFK Jr. failed to materialize.
So these people don't have jobs.
They can't have jobs. No. I mean, who's got the goddamn time for this? I remember a long time ago when I was doing clubs and you'd have to go to the radio stations on Thursday and Friday when the Dixie Chicks got in all that trouble.
Uh-huh.
And all the country DJs were like, I want you to take all your Dixie Chick CDs and we're all going to meet at the Walmart and we're going to run them over. And I'm like, now that's forward thinking. Take what you paid for and destroy it to hurt their feelings. Also, who's got that kind of time? You know what I call those people? Unemployed. QAnon supporters returned to Dealey Plaza on Saturday, 4 days after they first gathered, expecting JFK Jr. to rise from the dead. Despite JFK Jr. failing to materialize at Dealey Plaza and the Rolling Stones concert, because then they thought they pushed it to that. Well, maybe he'll be. Some people think Keith Richards is him. They're not really realizing they were both alive at the same time. So, and Keith, yeah. It's one thing if you say he's a brand new. Keith and him were living at the same time. Truthers are still gathering in Dallas. Yeah, this was 4 days after what I told you about. This was written on November 6th. The reporter was Monselli, I don't know. He posted an image of the Q attendees forum taken from the right-wing social media app Telegram. Never heard of it. Update, the situation with JFK Jr. Truthers at Dealey Plaza has, believe it or not, taken a more bizarre turn. Wait till you hear this. They've now gathered into a single line and are one by one approaching a man with a bird on his shoulder who appears to be giving them individual directions.
Who appears to be crazy?
Well, who's crazier? No, I'm the idiot. I should be down here selling these people T-shirts. Yeah. That's on me. If they're this gullible, I could get an open micer in Dallas to run them down there for me if I pay for the shirts. Then give the kids money to sell them.
I like it.
Mm-hmm. So this guy with the bird on his shoulders giving them individual directions. They wore T-shirts suggesting JFK would become former, we know this, Donald Trump's running mate. A lot of them surmised that Keith Richards was in fact JFK Jr.
Wow.
Yeah, in a disguise when they attended the Rolling. Oh, so now he's going to be disguised. What will be the point of that? Yeah. So, that's the latest. I don't want to go. I like to just find out from regular news sources what's happening with them because I'm afraid if you go on their things, they're going to know my, they'll know it's me. And then they'll find me. Yeah, I don't trust them. I don't trust them at all. Update! Saddest thing ever. My Irish, not mine, but what we've talked about, Fungi, the Irish dolphin.
Yeah.
Down by Dingle. That's where Dingle's the town where you would get on a boat and you'd go see Fungi. I've seen him many, many times. My brother made fun of me until he saw Fungi. I made Patrick get in the boat. I'm like, Patrick, get in. He's like, how do we know it's the same dolphin? He's negative Nancy, negative Nancy. Shut your mouth. Because they have marks on him. They have individual marks. They can tell them apart. And there's only one, and he's enormous. He was a giant dolphin. He was really a big, big old dolphin. Yeah. But we talked about it on the podcast. He went missing during COVID, and they've decided he's probably not coming back. Like he probably died. He was getting old.
Oh.
Yeah, but it's the ultimate Irish goodbye.
Happy life.
He ghosted him. He's gone. We don't know he's not alive somewhere else, but I think maybe during COVID when the boats weren't going out and there's no people, he might have left. Maybe he's not dead.
Maybe he's in Canada.
Or maybe he's with that walrus, that fat ass that's sinking boats every day.
Yeah, Wally.
Him and Wally went away and said, screw people. Let's get out of here. Goddamn, Wally, every time you get comfortable in a boat, these people throw you out. Let's leave. Fungi was a national treasure. He was loved. He was much loved by the Irish people, particularly those close to Dingle, where he spent 37 years of his life. Yesterday, a year after Fungi went missing, a memorial was held for him. The below TikTok video gives a brief snippet of the memorial where a local priest...
See? Perfect.
...is giving a service at sea. For those who couldn't attend, Twitter approved to document it well. Murphy's Ice Cream gave out freebies with locals playing traditional music for the crowds that gathered. People went on free boat rides at once journey to see Fungi, seeing something different instead. The Dingle Peninsula Tourism Twitter page posted photos of the mural that was painted to honor Fungi at a darn site of an old lighthouse and was unveiled during the memorial. Now Fungi continues to look out on the ocean that he lived for so many years. We won't know for certain what happened to Fungi. But if the turnout is anything to go by, it's safe to say he was greatly loved and will be sorely missed. Oh. Gone, but never forgotten.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Well, then my dad called, and I sent this to him just this morning, and he called, and he said that Winter, that dolphin from the, kids movies, I don't know. My nieces were very upset to hear that Winter died. The one with the fake tail.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know enough about it, but my dad said in Florida, they spent 20 minutes of this 30-minute nightly news program talking about Winter. I'll find out more about that. But you can get your picture now with a wonderful portrait of Fungi. If you ever go to Dingle, which I would highly recommend. Truly the greatest dolphin. But he truly did an Irish goodbye. It's the greatest Irish goodbye of all time.
I like it.
Yeah. That's so much better because they was talking about Winter dying and it was saying goodbye to all of its friends. It was heartbreaking.
Winter was 16.
Winter was 16?
Yeah, and the star of a dolphin tail.
Dolphin tail, that's what the girls know. Yeah, okay. But that's, Fungi was at least 37. I Googled it. They can live to 50.
You met Winter in Clearwater.
I did meet Winter in Clearwater. I remember that. Yes, I took the girls and Jack too. Oh, I took all of them. Jack was so little, I don't think he cared. But the girls were into it. They couldn't believe it. They were little, probably six.
Yes.
Yeah, I forgot I did that. Look at me being a good aunt on the road.
Look at you not caring about Winter. Didn't make an impression.
You know what? No, there's too many kids' movies. I can't keep. Was it in Frozen? I don't fucking know.
Dolphin Tail.
Dolphin Tail.
Yeah, that was the name of the movie.
All right, well, I didn't see it. I pretend like I'm watching the movies with the kids, but I'm not. I'm reading Twitter and shit. They don't know. Well, now they do. They're 12, but
they're texting me back.
When they're little, yeah. I have to text my nieces to tell my mom something. I'll send them like a picture, show grandma in case she doesn't know this. And then like my mom had friends that came to a show. And I couldn't get a hold of them, and I knew this was like a mix-up that I had to fix. So I have to text the girls.
Yeah.
Are you with Grandma? Can you get a hold of Grandma? Could you please tell her I need her friend's number?
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Update! What we learned in the trial of Elizabeth Holmes this week. Get through it. Get through it. No, there's only one thing. This is an investor. I thought, I'm going to make it quick. Hold on. A frustrated investor takes the stand because you wonder, did any of these people, like if you're Betsy DeVos and you just drop $100 million into Elizabeth's little piggy bank, does anybody follow up? Does anybody check? It didn't really sound like many of them did. They just think this fucking miracle is going to happen. And, this guy checked. Email exchanges shown in court that Holmes grew to consider early investor Alan Eisman a nuisance. Now, see, this happened with the Bernie Madoff people, too. The initial people that were like, hey, buddy, I'd like to withdraw some of my money. Just and not saying why. Mm-hmm. Just, well, I wouldn't recommend that. And then they keep pushing them up. Yeah, I would recommend it because as of now, I've got shit from Shinola to pay you with. How do you like ranch dressing?
Shit from
Shinola. Oh my God. But it's the ones that start pestering that then, like, the Bernie Madoffs and stuff get shitty with and get shitty real fast with because they... Pew. A retired money manager. Okay, so he should be responsible with money.
Yep.
It's not like saying Kathleen took $500 to the casino. This is a responsible person. He took the stand Wednesday and said his family invested roughly $1.2 million in the company. About $1.1 million of that came in 2006 after he was introduced to Theranos by a friend who was a financial advisor to the Holmes family. He told me Elizabeth was brilliant. Okay,
no.
You got proof to me. Yeah, take somebody's fucking word for it.
Okay.
He testified that the Holmes was a source of information about the company. He said there were a number of factors that led to his decision to invest. Okay.
Right.
Let's hear them,
yeah.
Including that Oracle's Larry Ellison was a board member and investor, and he was told the company had several contracts with major pharmaceutical companies. Not true. Show me them.
Right.
It wasn't true.
No.
And revenue projections Holmes provided. Well, I'd like to see the revenue projections from someone outside of the lady that's trying to get me to give her money. For several years, he had this is where you can tell they're like, this is part of proving intent to me. Which I think she absolutely did. For several years, he had quarterly calls with Holmes, but that stopped in mid-2010. Jurors learned that after Eisman inquired via email about setting up their next call and asked for updated projections on the number of testing cartridges Theranos expected to sell, a metric Holmes had previously provided, the tension was palpable. He didn't get a reply, and he followed up, so she just didn't answer him. She just looked at it and went, boom, that's reality. I live in denial. I'm not dealing with that. Holmes replied, June is a tough month for us, and I don't know when we can do our next call. As you know, we don't do quarterly calls with our investors, many of whom invested greater amounts than you. Yeah, you're already saying, you're a piece of shit.
Yeah.
You're not even a major investor, and you're bothering me. I cannot commit to an exact quarterly schedule going forward. As discussed on our call in March, we cannot provide the level of communication you keep requesting. Well, if you're this guy, you say, I want my money back.
Right.
Because they said that they would do it. Given your frustration and level of our frustration with this interaction, I strongly encourage you to reconsider the opportunity to realize the return on your investment. No, I don't want to realize the return on my investment. I want my investment back. And I wonder what would happen. He testified that he was given the opportunity to exit then, and he didn't. He sought information from Theranos' chairman of the board, Donald Lucas, so he went above her or around her. The inquiry was forwarded to Holmes, who reprimanded Eisman. We have communicated about this multiple times before, yet you choose to continue going down this path. Eisman testified that this outreach on his part was not taken very kindly by Elizabeth. If you're doing everything you're supposed to do and everything's peaches and cream and you're making all your money, this would be no problem.
Right.
Despite no direct interaction with Holmes thereafter, he received an email to stockbrokers in late 2013 that the company was raising a new round of financing to help scale to customers and decide to invest again. Eisman tested it. He'd read a glowing Wall Street Journal opinion article, which he had been reportedly shown in the courtroom and presumed its technology was working.
Presumed.
Well, yeah. This is all a lack of research.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, not that I would do it, but I don't know how to do it. I wouldn't do this. I wouldn't give somebody $1 million. I'd rather give somebody $1 million to go to the racetrack or a casino. When he emailed, he wanted to have a call ahead of investing. Despite years of failing to get the company to communicate, Balwani quickly replied and agreed to speak. Eisman testified that he was shocked by the sudden change. However, the relationship took a turn for the worse again when Eisman started asking for a business update and possibly exiting his investment. Eisman is set to resume his testimony next week. So that's what's going on. They're almost done, the prosecution. Yeah.
And then it's time for the defense, and I hope Elizabeth testifies. Well, I mean, I had a lot of machines that weren't working, but I was really hopeful. I mean, I told everybody they were working. I mean, I lied about all that. But it didn't mean they wouldn't work, right? Right? Like, at some point, like, magic would happen.
She's a fraudster.
She's a fraud. I'm a fraudster. Yeah. I'm not a criminal. I'm a fraudster. Like a trickster. Update!
That's a good one. Okay. This is more about, I'm just leading you guys to go watch it. Mm-hmm. Now, I have never been to Iceland. My friend Tracy has. And she said she really enjoyed the people, but she didn't think of them as like, they're not very like a sarcastic, funny per se.
They're dry.
Dry, yeah.
They're dramatic.
Yeah, a little bit. Well, no, who went to Iceland first? The Norwegians? Vikings?
Vikings.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Iceland skewers Mark Zuckerberg's metaverse with a new tourism ad. And I'm not going to do it much justice, but if we put it in the show notes, because it's kind of, it could have been a lot funnier, but for these guys, where funny isn't their first knee jerk, it's fucking funny. And the guy who does it, oh, he's cuter than Mark Zuckerberg, but good enough.
Yeah.
White guy, weird hair. Yeah. It's so funny how they talk about the real world, because everything in Iceland is so weird, but it's real.
Right.
And it's just, that's just a tip. It's only on YouTube.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a whole ad to get people to come, but I'm going to make sure, I think for sure it's only, the ad, which is available on YouTube, only gets more ridiculous from there with a parody of Zuckerberg and his recent concept review for Meta. So, yeah, so. And they make fun of his sunscreen habits. The guy's face is totally white. That's just a little something for fun.
Nice.
Yeah. Update. Oh, my God. This is so exciting. I've waited for this for years.
What's going to fly?
Nothing's going to fly. I don't have any new flying devices. Mm-hmm. But the mystery of who is Satoshi Nakamoto.
Nice.
The founder of Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Some people say Satoshi is one person. Some people say it's multiple people. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows. But by the way, for all you Bitcoiners, I like Ethereum. You all know that. It's on fire.
Oh, yeah.
All of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's all, I can't guarantee it'll last. Maybe you should wait for a dip. I don't know. Just saying, if you'd have hung in there.
Buy the dip.
Boom. Bitcoin creator Satoshi Nakamoto could be unmasked at a Florida trial. Yep, a lawsuit over a $64 billion cachet looks beyond the pseudonym to solve the mystery of who created the cryptocurrency. A seemingly run-of-the-mill trial is playing out in Florida. The family of a deceased man is suing his former business partner over control of the partnership's assets. In this case, the assets in question are a cache of about 1 million bitcoins.
Holy shit.
Yeah, the equivalent, $64 billion.
Oh, my God.
Belonging to the bitcoin's creator, the pseudonymous Satoshi Nakamoto. I love his name. Her name? Who knows? It could be a woman.
Yeah.
How do we know?
It could be a dolphin.
Could be a dolphin from... The dolphin tail. Yeah, there were no dolphins in Frozen.
No.
You've
never seen Frozen.
Yeah, I've seen it. I sit there with the kids. It's like Harry Potter. And I used to do a joke where they're like, well, the books are a lot better. I'm like, well, that's what you get for reading. You know? I didn't read them. I thought the movie was fine. I enjoyed the game on brooms or whatever with the ball. Fine. The family of the dead man says he and his business partner together were Nakamoto. Oh, so he's saying there were two people that are Satoshi Nakamoto. This guy, the dead guy, his family suing. Thus, the family is entitled to half the fortune. Who is Satoshi Nakamoto has been one of the financial world's enduring mystery. Does the name refer to one person or several, or why he or she never touched a penny of that fortune? That's strange too.
Yeah.
The answers to those questions are at the center of a Florida dispute of the Bitcoin itself. Bitcoin has become a $1 trillion market with tens of millions of investors. It has challenged governments trying to regulate it and has been endorsed by some governments. The technology behind it seems to be a way to rewire the global financial system. Yet who created it and why they created it remained a mystery. And that is all before you get to who controls one of the largest private fortunes in the world. This is what a Florida jury will try to tackle. Oh, my God. This is where you need my idea. And we have retired lawyers and judges sit on that jury, because if you start talking to this lady, and yeah, I graduated from college, but nowhere near these kind of subjects, it's going to be way too hard for your average rabbit. Okay?
It's not about college, it's about attention span.
Attention span with these kind of topics. And it's not like I don't try. It's the same thing with following directions. I try.
Yeah, it's bad.
Oh, it's bad. Failure. Every fucking time. Me and an IKEA desk could go for days round and round trying to put something together from there.
Yeah, true that.
Anyway. The family of David Kleiman is suing his former business partner, a 51-year-old Australian programmer living in London named Craig Wright. Kleiman died on April 26, 2013. Wright has been arguing since 2016 that he created Bitcoin, a claim dismissed by most in the Bitcoin community. Kleiman's family argues that the two worked on and mined Bitcoin together, entitling Kleiman's family to half a million Bitcoins. It's about two friends who had a partnership, and about how one of them tried to take everything for himself after the other died, said the Kleiman family's attorney. The defense said it's evidence that it has evidence to show Wright as the creator of Bitcoin and never included Kleiman. We believe, so who we're going to say this guy's the creator? Craig Wright, an Australian? We believe that there's nothing to indicate or record that they were in a partnership. For the Bitcoiners, there's only one piece of evidence that could conclusively prove the identity of Satoshi Nakamoto, the private key that controls the account where Nakamoto stored the 1 million bitcoins. Anyone claiming to be Satoshi could show that he or she has them by moving even a fraction of a coin out of it. It's never been moved.
Oh.
The mystery is one of the curiosities of Bitcoin. On October 31st, 2008, somebody using that name sent a 9-page paper to a group of cryptographers explaining a system of electronic cash that allowed people to exchange value without the need for a bank or other party. A few months later, the Bitcoin network went live and Nakamoto collected 1 million Bitcoins in its first year. It was earlier in 2008 that the family of Kleiman claims the business partner Wright asked for Kleinman's help in what would become that 9-page paper. They collaborated on the white paper and launched Bitcoin together. So Craig Wright.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
I don't know. Maybe we'll get to find out who Satoshi is, or maybe it should be a mystery forever.
Yeah.
I don't know. What would it do? There's 64 billion sitting around in Bitcoin. Nobody's touching it. It's weird.
They don't know him. They don't know paddles.
They don't know paddles either. Yeah. Mystery that will remain forever. Somebody said Mike paddles up more. Nope. Paddles don't want that.
Nope.
Update.
Yes.
Okay. Because I'm not going to lose track of these people.
Okay.
Remember one of our traitors that attacked the Capitol? That's what I like to call him. You can call him insurrectionist if you'd like. I prefer traitor.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the guy with the horns?
Yeah. The
and shaman. The fur on his head?
The vegan shaman.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he wanted vegan food. Right. Capitol rioter Jacob Chansley, perhaps known as the horned and fur-clad QAnon shaman, requested that the time he's already spent in jail be his sentence for participating in the January 6th attempted insurrection. And this is what he did. He misspelled Forrest Gump's name. Chansley's attorney quoted the character in the petition for time served writing. The horned guy wrote this. My mama always said you've got to put the past behind you before you can move on. Then he quoted Forrest Gump, and it's spelled wrong. According to the filing, Chansley has served 317 days in solitary confinement in Alexandria, Virginia, due to COVID restrictions since his arrest. He has pleaded guilty to obstruction of an official proceeding in early September, and his attorney wrote that he has shown contrition for his misconduct.
Oh, come on.
We'll see about that.
Yeah.
I do think this guy might be a little off the charts in the mental health category. Yeah, somebody might want to make a... Then this one, here's another one, update. It's kind of news, but crying pro-Trump Capitol rioter who assaulted a cop, sentenced as he's in the riot. He's part of the rioter, the traitor day, where they all, I watched it live on TV. I'm like, does nobody care? Like, I'm texting my friends. They're like, I want to do that. I want to scratch the store. Really? There's people attacking our Capitol, and I believe they're Americans.
Right now. I don't know about the guy with the horns.
Yeah. I don't know where. everybody else is at, but Mike Pence better run for his goddamn white ass because I'm seeing him erect the whole thing where they're going to hang him. I don't know if they're serious. They're particularly angry with Mike. A Donald Trump supporter from New Jersey who assaulted law enforcement on the attack of the Capitol was sentenced to 41 months in prison. Wow. Well, don't hit a cop. There you go. Like, a lot of these people probably didn't get that long, but they probably didn't hit a cop. Well, 4 would be 48. So it's less than 4. It's 3 years. It's 7 months. 7? Is that right?
Yeah, a little more.
Yep. 8? Yep. Whatever. He'll probably be out in 2. Still a long time, though. But you know what? This is the idiot. Here's where you get on the idiot thing. Ryan J. Riley. And he posted it on Twitter. This is what he posted. What do patriots do? We fucking disarm them and then we storm the fucking Capitol. Fuck you. There's a picture of him launching, you know, we're rambling on. He's the son of a Jersey trooper. The brother of a Secret Service agent who served on Michelle Obama's detail. He was sentenced by so-and-so. A tearful Fairlamb is his last. I don't know why it's Ryan. Oh, Ryan J. Riley, because he posted what's his face on the thing. He said he brought shame upon his family, asked to show some mercy. He said he was completely irresponsible, reckless behavior. He takes full responsibility. Well, you have no choice. You have no choice to take full responsibility.
No.
Gigs up. You're going to prison. Yeah. He was the first Capitol rioter to take a plea for assaulting an officer and the first one to be sentenced for a violent crime. He pleaded guilty to 2 counts, one of abduction of official proceeding and the other of assaulting a. Oh, there you go. There's just a little update. You don't think, not everybody got away with that. Some people did. There's like 250 of them they still can't find. But that's because I don't think they understand the social media enough. I bet my nieces could find them.
Probably.
Yeah. They probably have dances on TikTok. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's all my updates. That's pretty good, right?
Yeah.
All right, we're moving on to news. This made me really happy, and I like it when there's something crazy I've never heard of. You ever heard of a cotton candy lobster?
Nope.
Me neither. Cotton candy is one of the last words most people would use to describe a lobster, but one special crustacean fits the bill. Haddie, a rare cotton candy-colored lobster, was caught in Maine earlier this week. Unlike a regular blackish brown, wait till you see the color of this thing.
Okay.
It's spectacular.
Is it pink?
It's a little more blue, but it's got pink in it, so it could be the swirl.
It's blueberry.
It's the blueberry swirl with the pink. It's beautiful.
Nice.
Haddie features, they named it Haddie, iridescent blue and pink hues on her body. Yeah.
Great.
Bill Coppersmith, a Maine lobsterman and supplier for Get Maine Lobster, found the creature in Casco Bay. It's the first one he's ever caught. Your odds of catching one is 1 in 100 million.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I've seen the blue ones,
yeah.
Like the super blue ones, but
yeah.
This one, whoo, it's like a sky, like a good guy. He's previously caught orange and white lobster, which are also rare, and he's named them after his grandchildren. Her coloring is caused by a genetic mutation. I don't need to go into all that science.
I googled, what is a blue lobster called? It's called a blue lobster.
Good job. What is a blue lobster called? Alex, what is a blue lobster? Hey, buddy, that was my question.
Homerus gabarus.
Lobsters can live long, long lives in captivity, so as long as the water is clean and well oxygenated. So Haddie, nobody's going to kill Haddie. They're going to find the best place for her to live. So there you go. Though she'll probably be at some place. You got to see it. It's something I've never seen one.
She's pretty.
She's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Update!
Updates.
You're right. Well... No,
it's a baby update.
It's a fast food baby update.
Oh, yeah.
But it's also news.
Okay.
Oh, my God. Okay, I love Arby's.
Yeah.
I just get a regular roast beef sandwich and a Diet Coke. Now, being from St. Louis, there's another roast beef fast food only in St. Louis called Lion's Choice. We call it Lao Chow.
Delicious.
Yeah, it's a lot saltier.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I love it. But I love Arby's too. Like it would pain me to make. I will always get Loud Chow if I'm in St. Louis, just because you can't get anywhere. But shout out to Lion's Choice. Love, 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 love. But I love Arby's on the road when that's my only choice. I think they've gone a little too far here, though. Okay. I think my friends maybe had some drinks before they had an idea meeting. Arby's made French fry vodka, and Connecticut is one of the few states who can get
it. No!
You should see the bottles. Oh, my God.
Oh, how do we buy it?
Well, that's a problem. French fry vodka might sound like a late-night college party experiment, but it's actually the latest offering from Arby's. You'll be able to sample it in Connecticut. The fast food restaurant chain, which specializes in roast beef sandwich, is releasing two flavored vodkas with the flavors profiled inspired by its original curly fry and the new crinkle fry. I love curly fries.
Yeah.
I never order fries at a food, fast food thing. And, you know, I would when I was younger and didn't care if I weighed 7,000 pounds. But at Arby's, I will break that rule. Because of their curly fries. Curly fries. I still need to try Wendy's new French fries and give it a chance. Okay. Like I need another thing that I go, oh, I love that shit. That's terrible for me. The curly fry vodka is distilled in cayenne, paprika, onion, and garlic. And the crinkle fry vodka incorporates kosher salt and sugar. Ooh. Yeah, what do I like? Salt.
Exactly.
Right. Though we've mastered the art of the drive-thru fries, we wanted to take it one step further by making them 80 proof, said Patrick Schwing, chief marketing officer for Arby's in a press release. Being a potato-based liquor, this limited edition vodka is infused with crinkle and curly fry flavor, so Arby's fans who have legal drinking age can responsibly enjoy our menu from bag to bottle.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
It doesn't sound like a professional wrote that. It sounds like I wrote it.
Right.
Bag to bottle, baby. The vodkas are available in limited quantities November 18th on arbysvodka.com to residents 21 and older. Here's where it's legal. But also, first I'm going to tell you where these states you can order it. California, Connecticut, D.C., Florida, Idaho, Louisiana, Minnesota, Nebraska, Nevada, Oregon, West Virginia, and Wyoming. A second drop will happen on those November 22nd. But each bottle is $59.99 plus shipping and handling. Minnesota-based.
Oh, I think it'd be worth it.
Arby's has also entered a partnership with Chef Justin Sunderland, who created signature Bloody Mary recipes using the vodka and other ingredients of the chain's horsey sauce.
Oh, I love that.
I don't so get the horsey good. Sauce. Oh, their roast beef's so good, I eat it plain.
Yeah.
I don't need some.
Just a tiny
I know it's. Delicious. I've tasted the horsey sauce. It's like, they're going to post social media videos featuring the recipes where you can make the stuff this chef is going to create. I love Arby's, but I don't think people are going to pay $60 for a bottle of vodka and shipping and handling, especially when you don't know if you're going to like it. Then you just wasted like $80. It should be cheaper. We're going to get it, and I'm going to try it on this podcast.
How are you going to get it?
Oh, I got friends everywhere. I'm going to make, come on, paddles. I have friends all over this country. Let's see where I know people. California?
Vegas.
Tons of people. Connecticut? Well, I know a couple.
No, you don't know
yeah,
Vegas.
I know two people in Connecticut.
Two?
D.C.?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. My friend John will do it. Florida? I know a ton of people. Idaho? I don't know anyone that, I know people from Idaho. But anyway, yeah, Louisiana, of course. Minnesota? Tons. Nebraska, absolutely. Nevada, Oregon, West Virginia, Wyoming. I don't know anybody in Wyoming. Not
personal.
Not personal. Yeah, the Larry Cable guy can get it.
Yeah.
He's in Nebraska. Speaking of fast food news.
We'll pay him back.
I'll pay him back. I'll trade him a Pubcast t-shirt.
And
then, but then he has to order the vodka and then illegally mail it to me. He may not want to do it because it's illegal. I have to find somebody with looser morals. If it was Texas, it'd be no problem. Chick-fil-A admits it has a big customer problem and no obvious solution. Please do not send me hate mail about talking about Chick-fil-A. I know that their policies are A, B, C, and D. George Wallace has the best Chick-fil-A joke. He goes, oh, you know, Chick-fil-A, they're religious people, and they say they're closed on Sunday. What I like to do is drive through Saturday night, buy every biscuit and every sandwich they have, and then Sunday, I just want to go sit there, drive through, and sell their shit. My ass are not open. They're open now. How many sandwiches would you like, ma'am? How many breakfasts? Welcome. But this is something noticeable. There's two of them by my house, and they have like three lanes going, and the lines, they never stop. And then I think, I've eaten Chick-fil-A. It's fine. I really, I won't do it anymore because the lines are too long. But I do think, I don't know, they're, you know, what, I'm not going to get into all that. But they have great diet lemonade. Their diet lemonade is good. But I would rather go to Arby's anyway or Wendy's. But every time I drive by there, I think, why can they not figure this out? People are leaving.
They have iPads and stuff.
No, but they are leaving the line. I've seen it. Because there's one right by Home Depot. It almost shares the same parking lot. Yep. And you can see people drive up and go, nah, fuck it. And leave. You are losing customers because you are not figuring out your drive-thru fast enough.
Which means you have to bend them in.
Right. You can't let them get out. That's what you need to do. You trick them in like I got tricked into goddamn Mickey Mouse's meet and greet in Disneyland. And first, we're in Mickey's house. You're like, oh, this is great. Oh, this shouldn't take that long. Then you just go through this trail of never-ending lines. I'm like, oh, total trickery. When you want life to be easier, you turn to technology, be it reading material, entertainment, love, or merely food. An app will bring the longing go away. As the pandemic has continued to change human behavior, the fast food business has barely believed its good fortune. For a long time, many restaurants were closed. The likes of McDonald's, Burger King. I do love a Burger King burger every now and then,
it's
too.
Great.
Very good. And Chick-fil-A had ready-made drive-thrus. They could satiate those ready to salivate. Look at somebody getting tricky with their words. For some, though, this brought unexpected customer problems. Chick-fil-A CEO Dan Cathy admitted, we estimate about 30% of the people are driving away because the lines are so long. Absolutely, I would believe that. Now, of course, being a hearty proponent of a six-day-a-week capitalism, Cathy was underlying the problem about how popular this fried chicken concern is. Technology can solve this drive-through snafu. Surely, though, technology can solve this drive-through snafu, right? By constant examination of the fast food tech enhancements has revealed how many chains are testing AI ordering at drive-thrus. And we know McDonald's, because we talked about it, is working with IBM to just have it robotic.
Yeah.
And so that's what they're going to have to go to.
Yeah.
30% of its customers, because they can't figure it out. This isn't. Let's see if there's anything else.
Do you like their sauce?
Oh, wow. What? This is crazy. Chick-fil-A's rival, Popeyes, I actually like Popeyes better, has now closed 40% of its dining rooms. Dining room. Let's use that. Come on now. Yeah. Talk about an upgrade. How about area?
Right.
How about area? Because it can't hire, won't pay for enough new staff. Because this is a shortage of labor.
Right.
All right. Kathy says one solution is to create ghost kitchens of cooks churning out food in an anonymous warehouse for delivery only.
Well, they
I don't have a problem with that.
Text a lot about you want some free chicken.
DoorDash and stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Indeed, Chick-fil-A is experimenting with ghost kitchens that offer far more than its traditional menu. Oh, and this is a good time to mention that Chick-fil-A is currently being sued for allegedly hiking prices on its delivery items.
No.
I thought they're all Christian-y. It's not very nice.
Nope.
Some businesses, some pleasures will always involve analog consumption and a strong level of analog action, no matter what technology claims it can solve. Yes, one day you may grab your at and a robot, human, will make your food, and another robot, dog, will faithfully bring it to you. One day. For now, though, technology can only enhance the speed of fast food and so much. Well, you know what? I think if I had a weekend to think about it, I could figure out how to solve their little problem. You can't have 30% of your people running away.
Agreed.
That's terrible.
I agree.
That's a shitty business model.
Totally agree.
How much money did you make? I don't know. How much could you have made?
A lot.
Okay. Where'd everybody go? I don't know. I'm gonna finish. This is great.
Okay.
This is so great.
Does this make you happy?
Yeah, because I love it when people find weird shit. Because it just gives you hope that there's weird shit out there.
People love the canoe.
The canoe, did they like it?
Yeah, I loved it.
It was, it's fantastic.
So cool.
Yep. Wait till they clean it up, too. And we can see what it really looks like. Like, they just, the only picture.
It's gonna take a while.
Well, the, I know. Yeah, come on, just get some, you guys need, I got some new things. I got it at the grocery store that could help clean that. A rare Chopin portrait found in an antique market could be worth millions.
Wow, cool.
I don't go to antique markets because I don't really
care.
Well, sometimes if my friend Andy, she does all kinds of stuff. I have found some cool, like I found a chandelier that was really cool.
Nice.
Yeah, you can find cool stuff. I like going. I just don't know what I'm doing and I don't really ever buy anything. I just end up buying jerky. There's always some hut over there that's got good jerky.
And draft beer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I grab a beer. Yeah. A damaged painting bought at an antiques market for a few zlotys, which is a Polish dollar.
Oh.
Z-L-O-T-Y-S.
Thank you for that.
Zlotys.
Zlotys.
I don't know. Has turned out to be an extremely rare portrait of Frederick Chopin, potentially worth millions. Wow. The small oil on canvas. Let's put it in a museum in Boston and see if someone can steal it. Yes. Put it in the place of who's Chagall. They stole Chagall's or Degas. It was Degas. A Degas, his self-portrait. Put that there and go, well, it's a self-portrait. Well, it's not a self-portrait. Someone else painted it. But it's a portrait of an old person and a famous person.
Right.
The small oil canvas is only one of a few that is known to be painted during Chopin's lifetime. Well, because if I was those people, I wouldn't want to sit there for that long either.
No.
I got shit to do.
Yeah.
It took forever. Forever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The current owner, a 30-year-old man named, I'm going to call him Macy. I can't pronounce this. He bought it from his uncle, who himself bought it 28 years ago at an antique market in a small town near Lubin in eastern Poland. When the uncle fell on hard times, Macy bought it from him. How about just give your uncle a few bucks? You got to start buying shit off of him?
Yeah.
He then gave it to an expert for valuation. When he heard by phone during a car journey, what he actually said, the news was so astonishing that he crashed his car into a ditch.
Oh, my God.
We found out. Professor Darius Markowski, the art conservation specialist who first saw the work, said, this painting has been through a lot. That was my first thought. In fact, it came into my hands in terrible conditions. It must have been kept in bad conditions, probably been soaked in water. An analysis of the paint pigments dated the work to the around 1840s, a few years before Chopin died in 1849. Markowski said, the painting is an original work created in the 1840s and one of the few portraits of Frederick Chopin made during his lifetime. Journalist Joanna Lamparska, who reported on the discovery, said the portrait had previously been cut from its frames, which may suggest it was hidden, possibly stolen, that its fate was dramatic. The history of the painting is not known, nor how it found its way to an antique market in a town near Lubin. The artist who painted it is also not known. The canvas simply signed Alfred, followed by the word Pinzik. Pinzit. I can't say it.
Okay.
It's Latin for painted by. Nonetheless, so somebody named Alfred, that's all we know. Nonetheless, the painting will be a huge interest to Chopin scholars as it shows the pianist in an unglamorized form without embellishment. Professor Markowski said the few portraits of Chopin are generally idealized, where this portrait shows a thin, sickly man. The composer here is not beautiful here. He is shown in a naturalistic way. In view of the fact that there are very few portraits painted during his lifetime, the painting has great historical significance. He pointed to an unsigned portrait of Mozart that went up for auction in Paris in 2018, despite its guide price of 800,000 euros, eventually fetched 4.4 million euros.
Wow.
The discovery was made a couple years ago, but it's been kept secret while being restored. The painting has now been taken out of its vault to be viewed by the curator of the Frederick Chopin and George Sand Museum on Morica, who is in the Warsaw International Chopin Competition. They have that?
I guess.
It takes place in Warsaw, Poland this month. Oh my God, that is something I would not. There'd have to be a big liquor tent for me to go to a Chopin.
Nice.
I mean, good for them. I'm glad they're happy. There might be a new Banksy.
What? Wow.
It's an Irishman. Mm-hmm. A street artist who's 20, 200-foot high murals. That's what he paints. 200 feet. Mm-hmm. And he's afraid of heights. Shook up the artwork, was dubbed as a great talent of his generation and one to watch as his first British solo exhibition that is set to make nearly £1 million in euros in our, in London today. This is back. This was I read this at the end of October, so it's recent. Finn Dack, a 54-year-old from Cork, Ireland, paints murals across the world, but only started street art when he was 40 after a failed relationship. See? Breakups can bring out the best in termites. Well, you don't have to be sad. No. You can be sad, right. But maybe paint sad. The artist's real name is Finbar Note, with his pseudonym for an acronym for Dragon Armory Creative, the original name of his visual portfolio. Art critic and curator Yasha Young said Finn Dax was a great talent of his generation. That was 14 years ago. If you want to go look at this guy's stuff, it is pretty crazy awesome.
That's great.
Yeah. He quit his job as an engineer and draftsman and pursued a life on the streets of the world, creating colorful murals in countries around the globe. The artist pseudonym, we already know that. But he's been everywhere. Wow, this one's in, I don't even know what country that is. You got to go see him, though. He painted a 200-foot mural of Mexican painter Frida Kahlo in Guadalajara, western Mexico, by the English National Ballet's Isaac Hernandez, who comes from the city. And then he put sunglasses on her, but they gave her permission. They gave him permission to alter her likeness.
Cool.
I mean, she looks just like her.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Anyway, just go check his stuff out. Yeah, I was like, wow, this guy's stuff is crazy. And he was 40 years old, and he quit. That right. takes balls. He quit engineering and draftsman. That takes guts. okay, I thought, this is kind of crazy. Sports? Mm-hmm. We haven't talked about hardly any. Nothing really going on.
No.
My fantasy football.
You won.
I won, yeah. But
you probably win. Well, you won last week. You won 2 weeks in a row.
I don't understand why this many people in the NFL have COVID. There can't be this many breakthrough cases.
I agree.
I think they're just not getting vaccinated. I am so tired of turning on my phone and seeing a C on the head of one of my players. Devin. Fuck.
Seeing a C.
The giant C in a circle.
Hey, Devin.
Anyway, this will destroy my younger brother. Because he loves Michael Jordan.
Oh, no.
Scottie Pippen, though, has written a book. Because did you guys watch Michael Jordan, The Last Dance? The documentary.
Yeah.
It came on during COVID. I watched it. I think Michael is pretty arrogant. But, you know, he's probably the greatest player of all time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you get the right to be that guy if you want to be that guy.
Right.
But this is Scottie Pippen. He's got an upcoming memoir called Unguarded. Now, when you think about famous people like this, this is what he's willing to say out loud to the general public. God only knows what you're saying at home.
Right.
Because you find this palatable. Scottie Pippen on Michael Jordan's In the Last Dance. He couldn't have been more condescending if he tried. This is crazy. The text was from Michael. He didn't reach out very often. What's up, dude? I'm getting the word that you're upset with me. Love to talk to you if you have time. Scotty said, my schedule was packed that evening and I knew the conversation would take a while. I hit him back an hour and a half later. Let's talk tomorrow. Michael was right. I was upset with him. It was because The Last Dance, the 10-part ESPN documentary about the Chicago Bulls final championship season, which millions of people watched during the early weeks of the pandemic. Boom! That's when it happened. With no live sports on The Last Dance for 5 straight Sunday nights starting in mid-April provided a much-needed distraction from the new normal we suddenly found ourselves in. There was only so many news spots, and yeah, we're all bored with all that. The final 2 episodes aired on May 17th. Michael deserved a large portion of the blame. Similar to the previous 8 episodes, they glorified Michael Jordan while not giving nearly enough praise to me and my proud teammates. Sure, Michael deserved a large portion of the blame for that. The producers had granted him editorial control of the final product. So he could have said something.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And he didn't. If you ever watch Michael Jordan's speech where he gets, it's something at the ESPYs. Uh-huh. I was like, wow.
He's a
megalomaniac. Like, he was like, his kids were there. He's like, boy, I wouldn't want to be you. I'm like, oh my God. Hey. Yeah, having to follow me. I mean, good luck. You're never going to do it. And it's a shame because Patrick had posters of him all over the house. And he's the reason I started watching the NBA, because from St. Louis, we never had a team. And then it didn't even occur to me to watch NBA basketball because, I don't know, you don't have a team, you don't grow up with it. And then because of Michael, I started watching. And, you know, you could take the Ron White approach here. Doesn't matter what they are off stage or off the golf course or off the football field. They're only there to do that job. The rest of it is bullshit. I kind of agree at times. Yeah. But this is more than that. Now you're making movies about it. Mm-hmm. You're making money off of it.
Right.
It's a whole different thing. Markle deserves the documentary couldn't have been released. He was the leading man and the director. I had expected much more. When I first told about it a year earlier, I couldn't wait to tune in, knowing it would be rare. It would feature rare footage. I'll cruise through some of this because it just. Even in the second episode, while focused for a while on my difficult upbringing, unlikely path to the NBA, the narrative returned to Michael Jordan and his determination to win. I was nothing more than a prop. His best teammate of all time, he called me. He couldn't have been more condescending if he tried. On second thought, I could believe my eyes. I spent a lot of time around the man. I knew what made him tick. How naive I was to expect anything else.
Wow.
Whew. Each episode was the same. Michael on a pedestal, his teammates secondary, smaller. The message no different from when he referred to us back then as his supporting cast. Wow. From one season to the next, we received little or no credit whenever we won, but the bulk of the criticism when we lost. Michael could shoot 6-for-4 from the field, commit 5 turnovers, and he was still in the minds of the adoring press and public, the errorless Jordan. Now here I was in my mid-50s, 17 years since my final game, watching us being demeaned once again. Living through it the first time was insulting enough. Over the next few weeks, I spoke to a number of my former teammates who each felt disrespected. How dare Michael treat us that way after everything we did for him and his precious brand? Michael Jordan would have never been Michael Jordan without me, Horace Grant, Tony Kukoc. That's it. It's been so long since I've even heard his name. Yeah, Kukoc. John Paxson, Steve Kerr, Dennis Rodman, Bill Cartwright. Yeah, Dennis was really good there for a while. Ron Harper, B.J. Armstrong. He was great, too. They're all great. Luke Longley, Will Perdue, and Benny Washington. I apologize to anybody I've left out. I'm not suggesting Michael wouldn't have been a superstar wherever he ended up. He was that spectacular. Just that he relied on the success we attained as a team, 6 titles in 8 years, to propel him to a level of fame throughout the world that no other athlete except for Muhammad Ali had reached in modern times. To make things worse, Michael got $10 million for the documentary.
Oh, my God.
And hit the teammates, nobody got a nickel. Mm-hmm. Not a nickel. But, you know, that's back on you guys. Sorry. If you're Scottie Pippen and you're the rest of the team, you got to have a meeting and say, before we say the cameras can come in the locker room and cameras can get, and we're talking and signing waivers and shit, you got to say no.
Right.
What's this for? Yeah. Is this for a documentary?
Right.
I mean, I can understand comedians have agreed to way dumber shit, including myself, but this is Michael Jordan and there's cameras. Michael wasn't the only former teammate to reach out. 2 days later, he received a, I skipped this part. Nobody did. Another reminder of the pecking order from the days. For an entire season, we allowed cameras in the sanctity of our locker rooms, our practices, our hotels, our huddles, our lives.
Wow.
Then it goes on about John Paxton, and I don't need to read the rest of it to you, but yes, I'm buying it. No. Yes, I'm going to read it.
Nobody likes him.
Not many people.
No.
I don't know. You know what he is doing? Michael Jordan is doing a lot of nice things in North Carolina, like for healthcare stuff. Like he's building like healthcare clinics. I'll find out about that so it feel like it's even-handed and we report something decent about the man. But I mean, he's an egomaniac.
Yeah.
You think Tiger would like...
No,
you know, the whole thing would be about him and how awesome he is and whatever.
Michael's a team sport.
True.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but if it was a Ryder Cup thing, golf can be a team sport.
Right.
Only once a year. Whatever. We're going to close with a little something. It's Happy.
Yep.
And it's about my friend Louis.
Black?
Louis Black.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this was a little national, and he didn't even tell me. I got to see this shit on Twitter. You're like my best friend. Like, hey, what's up? The Kurt Vonnegut Museum. Mm-hmm. All of you people know Kurt Vonnegut, the author. Yeah, it's a very famous person. Well, the museum and library is in Indianapolis, and I know this because Louis, whenever he does shows there, he goes over and does all kinds of things with them. Why? Because Kurt Vonnegut is Louis's favorite author ever, ever, ever of all time. The Kurt Vonnegut Museum and Library has a new board chairman. Their next board's chair has an international reputation. Comedian, actor, and author Louis Black. As a Vonnegut fan, he's long been involved with the museum. True. And he wanted to contribute more time to it. Founder and CEO Julia Whitehead said, fittingly, the news was announced Thursday on what would have been Vonnegut's 99th birthday. The board voted Black into the position Wednesday. His term will begin January 1st and last for a year as chair. His responsibility include leading meetings virtually or in person and following the organization's strategic plan. The move also makes him a member of the governing board for 3 years. It's unprecedented for our organization to have this specific scenario. We've been trying to become a national organization for years, and it just naturally will happen with him as board chair. His own message of social justice and just being kind to people, there's a lot of overlap between Louis Black and Kurt Vonnegut. How fortunate for us that he's willing to spend time with us. When I talk to him, he is into it, right? But he's like, I mean, these Zoom things can't be like 7 hours, though. Right. He's already like freaked out that he may have over, like. he's been an honorary board member for the past 10 years. He learned about the museum a decade ago when Whitehead approached him after a show and requested that he sign some books. She asked if he liked Vonnegut. Well, of course I do. There you go. So there you go. Congratulations to Louis. Congratulations to the Kurt Vonnegut Museum. That'll just be a lovely little marriage for the time, for that year. And then you get Lou for 3 more years to yourself on the board. That's very nice, though. Very excited. Yeah, it is great. Yeah. I think he'll actually like it. And I think that's all for this week, Termites.
Thanksgiving week.
Oh, well, Thanksgiving. Yeah. I'm going to make my mom's dressing. I'll make some videos. Cause I have to work that weekend, so I can't go, where normally I would be because I got to travel. So, sadly I will not have my mom making her dressing. I will have to make it. Although I think I've gotten better.
Really?
Oh.
Oh.
I've improved it.
Wow.
Yeah. I think it's as my mom got older, she just started making smaller portions of things because it would just be like, instead of like 40 of us, mm-hmm. 20. Right. But then she'd come over and go, here's a dressing. It was like the size of half a loaf of bread. Mom, that is not going to feed 20 people. What is the matter with you? And then I think she would skimp on stuff because she just didn't feel like doing it. Like, I'm like, there's not enough butter in here. Nobody needs that much butter. Okay, well, you used to do it. Where's the salt? There's no beef in for more salt in there. I'm like, well, I disagree. There's not enough salt. There's not enough sausage. You got cheap on this, Mom.
What are you doing for Thanksgiving?
For Thanksgiving, I'm going to watch football, mm-hmm. my fantasy team. I'm going to gamble. On DraftKings, and then I gotta go.
Where are you going?
I'm going to Charlestown, West Virginia. It's a casino. It's super fun. Yeah, it's super duper fun. It's about an hour from DC.
Yeah.
So the DC people sometimes, but I'm doing the Warner in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
Choose wisely.
Mm-hmm.
Do it to come to the casino. the fancy Warner Theater.
Watch the ponies.
The Warner's downtown. You can make an evening out of it.
Yeah.
But the casino's super fun, too, if you want to gamble and all that. And it's not that far. Okay, that's it, Termites. Back out on the road. Be good, Termites. Have a good Thanksgiving. Yeah. And just in case you ordered anything from Honey Baked Ham, the wait time to talk to them, 178 minutes. Wish I was making that up. They flipping delivered a ham and a turkey while I was gone, and I told them not to do that, and they did it, and now it's sat on the porch, and now what am I supposed to do now? Give it to the deer? I'm not eating that shit. It's been sitting out there for 3 days. No, I'm not. And it was just, but I can't even talk to somebody, go, can I take it to a honey baked ham deal and switch it? Mm-hmm. You know?
Nope.
Yeah. All right. That's it, termites. Ugh. Boo. Yeah. I like little laughing cows cheese wedges thing. Mm-hmm. Great. This product? No.
Not for you.
No, but I love the dressing. Yeah. All right, termites. That's it. Be good. Be nice, termites.
Thank you.
Be thankful, termites, for your Thanksgiving. Fire!